Okay, if we're ready to start, good afternoon. This is a meeting of the title setting board pursuant to Article 40 of Title 1, Colorado Revised Statutes. The time is 1:30. The date is Wednesday, February 6, 2008. We are meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Suite 270, Denver, Colorado. The title board today consists of Dan Domenico, the Solicitor General, representing the Attorney General's Office, myself, Dan Carton, the Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, representing Charlie Pike, the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Bill Hobbs, who's usually the Chair of the Board and representative of the Secretary of State's Office, is out of the state on business today. Also at the table to my left is Maury Kneiser of the Attorney General's Office. And to my right is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office. Today we are meeting to consider title setting for two proposed measures. Each of these measures will in effect have two titles or statements. One is the actual title of the measure, and the second is the ballot title and submission clause, which restates the actual title as a question. Any changes adopted to either of these will be considered adopted to the other. For anyone who wishes to testify, there's a sign-up sheet at the back of the room on the table. This hearing is broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website. The procedure will be that when the title board considers a proposed initiative for the first time, which each of these are, the board will follow three steps. First, the board members may wish to ask questions of the proponents. This is to ensure that the board understands the proposal. Second, the board will first determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title. In particular, the board must determine if the measure complies with the single subject rule prescribed in Article 5, Section 1, Subsection 5.5 of the Colorado Constitution and Section 140.106.5 of the Colorado Revised Statutes. This is because the board is prohibited from setting a title for a measure that contains more than one subject. Third, if the board determines that it has jurisdiction to set a title, then the board will use a staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes. And a copy of the staff draft for each of these measures should be on the table in the back of the room. Generally, we will take all testimony first, then the board will discuss and vote after all testimony has been completed. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board, and that's all we have today. Anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the title board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. The motion for rehearing will then be heard at the next regularly scheduled meeting of the title board. As always, please note that the title board does not deal or is concerned with the merits of any proposed measure. We are only concerned with the setting of titles. With that, the first item on the board's agenda today is 2007-2008, number 58, healthcare choices. I'll first open it up for testimony. As I noted, the first part of the proceeding will be a determination of whether or not the title board has jurisdiction and the single subject question, but I would open it up for testimony. And we have Mr. John Caldera signed up for this measure. Mr. Caldera, did you have any
comments? First of all, thank you very much, and I know that you look on your calendar and see that I'm going to be here, and it makes your day, so I'm glad to do this. One of you was obviously smart enough to play hooky. I think that was a good plan. First, let me just say that this is an addition to the Bill of Rights in the Colorado Constitution. It is a right to health care choice, and it has three very simple parts to it that are all interrelated. I strongly believe this is a single subject, that you simply cannot have the health care choice without these three simple statements of making sure that you are free to choose whether or not to be involved in a health care insurance plan, whether you and that person, your caregivers and insurance, want to pay with cash or without cash, and to open up the market for health care choice, that any health care product in the insurance markets that's legal for sale in any other state is also legal for sale here in Colorado. So with that, I ask that we can work on a title.
Thank you, Mr. Caldera. Are there questions from the board?
I have one question. Is this intended to change existing law, preserve existing law, or some combination? Is each of the three meant to prevent the state from enacting new limitations as you see it on health care choices, or is it seems to me that the third one especially may be an attempt to change existing law, and I just want to clarify whether that's your intent.
The intent here, at least with the first two aspects of this, are obviously to preserve what we have in health, Colorado's health care system. The third part of this obviously expands what is currently allowed in the state. Now, this is something that the state legislature could do on their own at any particular time, so to say that it creates something new might be a bit of an overstatement, but this simply allows for sale with other products that are allowed. When it comes to other insurance products, particularly life insurance products and some property insurance products, you're allowed to purchase from other states. Right now you can't do that with health care products. So there is a change there.
So the third one is intended, I assume we're talking here about mandated coverages that the legislature has set that says you can't buy health insurance.
Right now.
Or I think it's more in terms of you can't sell a health insurance policy in Colorado for sale one that doesn't include coverage for X, Y, and Z, and you're attempting to open that up. As long as there's any other state in the union that allows you to pick a plan without coverage for something or with a different balance of coverages.
I think you understand that pretty
okay.
Well. Basically, the goal here is to help people who cannot afford health insurance find a product that they can afford that fits their needs. Often in Colorado, we have so many mandates put on by the legislature, people can't find the product that they want at the price that they want. For instance, if you don't want maternity coverage, you might not be able to find that product here in Colorado. You don't want a certain amount of mental care coverage, you might not be able to find that here in Colorado. It might be available in New Mexico. And by having, for instance, a high deductible catastrophic policy, this will bring some basic insurance choices for people here in Colorado. So this is all about the right for health care choice. There's no mandate here that anybody needs to purchase anything, but it opens up so people here in Colorado have more choices in health care coverage.
All right, that answers all.
That Linda Gorman, my co-sponsor, is here as well and happy to answer any questions.
Okay. That I think that answered the only question I have at this point.
I didn't have any questions, and so I would turn to the question of whether or not the board has jurisdiction and the measure contains a single subject. Any discussion or comment? I guess I would just say that from the text of the measure, Mr. Caldera's testimony, and as stated in the ballot title that the board will take up if jurisdiction is found, it appears to me that this measure does meet the constitutional and statutory precepts for the single subject.
Yeah, I agree. It the three things are all pretty clearly related, even if it might be possible to do them one at a time. I don't think it's necessary. They're all related to the idea of healthcare and even somewhat more narrow subject of expanding or preserving healthcare choices for consumers, as Mr. Caldera puts it, and so I don't have much trouble seeing this as a single subject. So I guess I'll move that the board find that it has jurisdiction because the measure contains only a single subject.
And I'll second that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes by a 2-0 vote. Next, the board moves on to the title of the measure. And if, Ceci, you would put the staff draft up on the screen, and the staff draft is on the screen for number 58. And I will again look to Mr. Caldera. Any comments you may have on the text of the staff?
It was such a tightly drafted initiative. It's I think it makes your job a lot easier on this one. I don't know if concerning seems to be the word of art most used here on your initiative language. So I doubt I'm going to be able to convince you to change that to something such as preserving healthcare choice, which I think is really what this does. Although with the question about expanding that might take care of that. But in all honesty, I think the drafters got this pretty clear.
We don't have anybody else signed up. Any comment, discussion from the board on the text of the title?
I just have one that is related actually to what we spoke about before, and it has to do with using preserving in line 3. I'd hate to adopt a title and have the court throw it out as misleading. For using language preserving, when in fact, at least with respect to the third part of the measure, it's intended actually to expand the rights of persons to purchase certain health insurance products. And so I wonder if we could find a way to rephrase it there.
Actually, I think that's a pretty astute observation. I'm just thinking out loud. Maybe in line 4, where it's "and to purchase," something that makes it clear that this is an expansion. This is something not currently there.
Yeah, that may be the way to do it. Is leave preserving in line 3, and then at the end of line 4 to say something along the lines of "and."
And I might add to that preserving, maybe what we do is move preserving to line 2, because really you are preserving, one, the first section requiring persons to participate in any public or private health care system. That's already the status quo. We ought to make that case, and then on line 4, something different.
Can I make one comment?
Sure, you probably should
sign
up at one point as well, but go to the...
You'd come, sure, if you would mind signing up and then going ahead, go ahead and give us your name at the mic. Okay. If you could just say that again at the microphone, that'd be great.
My name is Linda Gorman. I just want to point out that if you are insured by a large employer, you already do purchase insurance from anybody in the United States. So I'm, just informative point. What we're doing is expanding it to individual policies, but we're not creating any insurance.
So, what if we basically, in the effort of making as few changes as possible, leave it essentially as it is, and then say, in line 4, something along the lines of, ensuring that persons shall have the right to purchase private, and then go on from there. That kind of tracks the actual language as closely as I can come. Doesn't really get into whether we're expanding or preserving or changing law that much, but just says we're to some extent ensuring something that's not necessarily there right now. That's the best I could come up with without really messing around with the whole grammar of the title, which I think is pretty good in general.
So if I understand you, Mr. Domenico, on line 4, after the language that you've proffered would be inserted after the second, between and 2 on line 4?
That's right. That's where it would go. And I think 2 would end up being deleted. Actually, the way I came up with it, it wouldn't. It would just insert ensuring that persons have the right to purchase. Goes on from there.
Is that an E or an I?
I would put E, ensure, rather than insure. I think it's technically...
I want you guys to write my greeting cards someday.
Yeah.
Ceci, I think that instead of IN, it's EN. Well, no, that's an I right
the
there.
Other e.
Right,
the
at the first two letters. There you go. Go ahead and move that particular change.
So, I'll move that we make that change to the title.
Now, I'll second it, but I guess I would like to ask Mr. Caldera for his comment. Is that language acceptable, consistent with? All in favor of that change, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes by a 2-0 vote. I had no further revisions. Did you, Mr. Domenico?
I don't, no.
Mr. Caldera, did you have anything further?
No, I think that's... clear, Linda.
Well, then I guess what I will do is, prior to the motion, I think Mr. Hobbs usually reads the text of the title. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning health care choices, in connection therewith, prohibiting the state and its political subdivisions from requiring persons to participate in any public or private health care system, and preserving the rights of persons to pay directly and in cash for lawful health care services, and ensuring that persons have the right to purchase private health insurance products legal for sale in other states, period. And I'd entertain a motion.
I'll move that the board adopt the title as so amended.
And I'll second it. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
That title has been adopted for initiative number 58, and the consistent change will be made to the ballot title and submission clause that was made to the language of the title. That concludes the discussion and hearing on initiative number 58. Thanks, Mr. Caldera.
Thank you.
Time.
And time is 1:50. The second item on the agenda is 2007-2008 number 59, restrictions on campaign contributions from government sole source.
Good morning, or good afternoon. I'm Mark Bender. I'm an attorney for Mr. Caldera and Mr. Paul Hill, proponents of the proposed initiative. With me as co-counsel, Mr. Robert Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. The first item that the title board will consider is whether or not the measure contains a single subject for jurisdictional purposes. And I'll first take testimony. Mr. Bender, since you are, as you stated, representative of the proponent here, did you have any comment on the initiative and single subject?
The proposal of the initiative is to ban sole source government contract holders from making campaign contributions to political parties or ballot issues upon which they will expect to receive a sole source contract. So we believe it is within the single subject.
Thank you. And I would turn it back to the board for any questions or comments of the proponent on the measure. Mr. Domenico, did you have any questions?
I'm not sure I have any general questions.
You? I have no questions on that relate to the single subject requirement. It appears to me that the measure encompasses a single subject relating to contributions and sole source government contracts. At this time, we have two other persons signed up, Robert Lichty and Mark Gruskin. Would either of those individuals want to comment at this point on the measure relative to the single subject requirement?
I'll surrender the podium to Mr. Gruskin.
Thank you. My name is Mark Gruskin, and I'd like to address the single subject issue. This is a measure that defines sole source government contracts in a way that, frankly, to the best of my knowledge, it's never been defined before. It specifically refers to any government contract that does not use a public and competitive bidding process soliciting at least three bids prior to the awarding of the contract, and then goes on to say specifically, and the only specific example of a sole source contract or a specific reference is to collective bargaining agreements with a labor organization representing employees, but not employment contracts with individual employees. The board often asks, how do we apply the decision in initiative number 55 from the 2006 cycle? And I admit that there may be times or cases in which it isn't clear, but this actually brings 55 to high resolution. As you'll remember, the Supreme Court there said that there were two subjects because there was a specific service that was going to be affected, medical and welfare services, and then a plethora of other administrative services that would be affected. And what is important here is that this is a measure that, like number 55, highlights a single type of contract or a single type of enterprise. Here it's a collective bargaining arrangement, and then sweeps within its boundaries every other kind of possible contract. The court in number 55 was really very clear. They said government services achieve and facilitate a purpose or purposes. That is, a government service is not a purpose in and of itself, but the mechanism by which purposes are achieved. So you could simply use a lump, overly broad subject, like non-emergency services, to somehow describe what that measure was really doing. And then the court goes on to say, and I'm not going to quote it for you, but because I know you've read it, that it is would it be a very different situation for voters to consider emergency services on the one hand, and in terms of medical and welfare services, and then every other thing that a government could do, like recording property title and the like. Here what you've got is a situation in which every contract that is does not compel or somehow require three bids is included here as a sole source contract. Now that in and of itself is a major change. Why? Because sole source contract isn't defined except in Colorado law under the procurement rules. And how is it defined? It's defined under Rule 24-103-205-01A as any procurement, it says a requirement for a proprietary item does not justify a sole source procurement if there is more than one potential bidder or offeror for the item. In other words, where you have two bids or more, it is not a sole source contract. So you are going to have an increase in what is considered sole source contracting under this measure to include all sorts of things, particular types of equipment that are unique, or at least reasonably unique, because they don't have three manufacturers. Provision of certain types of management services, like prison administration services, are going to fall within this kind of category. There are going to be other types of services as well that people simply will not anticipate. But that's not the point. The point is that you can't use the specific that is highlighted and then pretend like the general, which is going to be all-encompassing, is part of that same single subject. And that's what the court said in number 55. Now, agree with that decision or not, that's what the court said. And it seems to me that this measure raises exactly that issue because it raises the bar for what a sole source contract is. Currently, if you get two bids, you're not a sole source contract. Under this measure, you've got to get three bids in order not to be a sole source contract. So that universe is going to expand significantly. And remember, it's going to expand at every level of government because it's the state, it's all municipalities, and every political subdivision of the state. So if you're in Canales County and you need a particular type of equipment, you may well be limited in terms of your bidders and therefore be covered by this measure. I'm not saying at this point that the proponents can't try and affect that level of change. I'm simply saying that the way they've done it here, to make one very specific example clear, an example which isn't typically thought of as a sole source kind of contract, and then sweep everything else to give it cover, violates the single subject doctrine. And so I'd suggest to you that you return this to the proponents, let them draft two measures, or let them draft one so that it's not nearly as problematic as this one, and then we can talk about that.
I have a couple questions, and I'm always happy to get someone to explain, especially you, explain 55 to me. But that did seem to be the concern. There was partly what you're saying, it seems to me, but that was really a broad change, an attempt to make a broad change to a lot of state law. This, it seems to me, is a much narrower focus. Although you have brought up some very good points, and I'm going to ask questions of the proponents when we're done, but I guess my question is, say that this measure, instead of referring to sole source government contracts, did exactly the same thing, but used a different language. It made up its own term, and then everything else was the same, a limited source government contract or something like that. So it didn't affect the procurement rules that use that term of art, but it still included this specific reference to collective bargaining agreements. Would your concern be the same? Because you have brought up a concern I hadn't thought about, which is whether this will change the procurement system by redefining sole source contracts in a way that I hadn't thought about. But if it didn't do that, I wonder if you'd still have the same problem. Or is the problem the specific include? It sounds like your real issue, I think you said, was including this definition of collective bargaining in here is sort of trying to, and then providing it cover by using this broader language is, I think, I'm not sure if you're arguing that it's just misleading or that it's two subjects or both, but so my question is, if it weren't for the sole source language, would you still have the same problem?
Mr. Domenico, I would. I would for actually both reasons. First of all, one of the problems the Supreme Court had in 55 was the initiative's complexity and omnibus proportions. And the omnibus proportions here aren't changed by finding some other name for this rose. It still takes, basically the covers the waterfront for every public entity. But the way it does it is to, just as happened in number 55, to highlight one kind of enterprise with the understanding that there are a whole host of other enterprises that are included as well. And so I actually have both problems. And it seems to me the Supreme Court has acknowledged my first one, but ruled on the second one in the 55 decision.
I appreciate that. Let me ask a related question. I don't quite see this as wide-ranging omnibus as 55 would, but I understand where you're coming from on that. What if instead of highlighting, of it specifically including specifically referring to collective bargaining agreements, it were written in such a way that they would be included within its language, but it didn't specifically reference them? Would that be okay under your analysis?
My sense is that the Supreme Court at that point says, we're not going to interpret the measure to figure out how far it's going to reach. And the obligation on your part is to set a title that reflects the actual measure. And I maybe make the argument, you say thanks very much, but we're not going to interpret it, and we all go away.
See, now, so I think I agree with you on that. And then the problem I have with that is, why should it be to the detriment of a measure that they make one application of their measure more clear? Why should they be rewarded in that hypothetical for hiding the ball, essentially, and punished for being straightforward?
Well, I guess it depends where you give the benefit of the doubt. The goal here isn't to, in my view, somehow affect all sole source contracts and, oh, by the way, collective bargaining agreements are involved. The goal here is to go after collective bargaining units and prevent their political participation. And in so doing, we'll use a broader umbrella to cover them and some other folks. Now, we don't really want it to apply the way it's always applied, so we're going to make it three competitive bids as opposed to two. That'll make it look like it's something that it's not, but it will have it will still have the same effect. So I don't, frankly, I mean, and I'm basing my comments not on the review and comment hearing or anything else, just upon the rhetoric that's been bandied about this measure and similar types of things from these proponents. It seems to me that there ought not be necessarily any advantage converted to the proponents because they are general in their terms. The Supreme Court has said you can't penalize them for that either. Not unless it is so vague that the voters are not going to understand the magnitude of what they're voting on. Here, they've done exactly what 55 did, which was they highlight, in 55 it doesn't say, you know, all services. It says all non-emergency services. And the court said, geez, our problem with that is the way you read non-emergency could either mean a real, you know, emergency or just everything. And you can't kind of do some highlighting but also hide the ball. And that's what I think is going on here.
Mr. Griskin, does that, as far as the text of the measure goes, does that highlighting of collective bargaining agreements occur in the definition of sole source government contract? Is that where?
I'd have to take a look at the measure, but I remember that it occurs there. That may be.
I guess my question is does that particular clause in that definition, that kind of the basis for your argument here?
Correct.
Okay.
I guess maybe this is a better question for the proponents, but I'll ask you too. If that sort of second half of the definition weren't there and it were just left broad, making this change to the definition of sole source contract, would you then Because I do think that's the only place I see it in the measure. I could be wrong, but would you then be okay with that? And then we'd sort of have the fight. I mean, this is sort of the question I asked before. Do you think collective bargaining agreements are included within that broader definition, or do you think they would be excluded under the if they weren't specifically mentioned?
I think that you have to. I don't think that there's any legal definition of sole source contract that includes collective bargaining that I'm aware of. So that means that this is a fundamental change to the law, which you can do, but you can, just as the court in the recent Water case said, you can make those two fundamental changes, create a department, create a standard, but you got to do it in two measures. And what I guess the answer to your question, Mr. Domenico, is I can't tell you whether or not collective bargaining could reasonably be read into the rest of that sole source government contract language.
Okay.
I'm going to use the same response that the court uses, which is, we'll see if it passes. But I know that by highlighting it, that they've run afoul of what the line that the court drew in number 55.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gruskin. Mr. Bender? Give you the opportunity to respond?
Well, I can first respond with the allegation that this will drastically change the sole source contracting rules. First of all, when this was drafted, we paid particular attention to the procurement rules to make sure that, to the best of our abilities, that this proposal fit within those rules. And one specific way that we did this was requiring that the bids be solicited, not received, as in the procurement rules. In other words, all a community or a government source has to do is to solicit three bids to have it not a sole source contract, which is entirely consistent with the procurement rules. There'll be absolutely the passage of this amendment, assuming it passes, will have no bearing on the procurement rules whatsoever. Okay, some of the other claims regarding the case of Initiative 55, I think, are overblown. In other words, as the board recognizes, its duty is to set a title and a submission clause, not to pass on the possible merits or potential of what may happen under this proposal. And I think Mr. Gruskin's comments come largely under that. There is simply a single subject here, and that is to prohibit contributions by political contributions by persons or parties who hold sole source government contracts. And the idea is to prevent the appearance of impropriety and prevent any actual impropriety. I think this would occur much more on a local level than it will on a state level, but the purpose of the amendment is one-fold: prohibit those type of political contributions. As far as the collective bargaining goes, I think that we could define sole source government contract in a lot of ways, could have more fully defined it, and it would not violate the Single Subject Act. The fact that, well, we threw in one piece of language that may have a wide-ranging effect doesn't necessarily make this a dual-subject initiative. Again, the purpose is to amend a specific article of the Constitution, Article 28, which is for Fair Campaign Finance Act, to prohibit this type of contribution. I think it's entirely consistent with the single subject, but I'd be happy to answer questions.
Yeah, I appreciate your explanation of the relationship of this to the procurement rules, and I see now that you're right about it, saying soliciting at least three bids. So I'm not quite sure how that would work out in practice, but my bigger concern than that really is, I mean, what about Mr. Gruskin's point that we do have to deal with Amendment 55 without passing on the merits of the measure? We have to decide whether this, in fact, is a single subject, as that term's used in the law, and as the court has interpreted that. Isn't Mr. Gruskin, if not right, at least onto something, that the court in 55 and in other places, although not consistently, I would argue, said you can't try to do two things that essentially voters might be surprised about. And here, as you say, this is in a section about campaign finance, and people might say, hey, look here, we've got a measure that's basically saying these people who get no-bid contracts or limited-source bidding contracts can't give certain contributions. But then at the same time, you're also defining those contracts in a new way, doing something specific that I certainly agree it's related to the general purpose and the subject of it, but under 55, are those not two kind of things that the court says do them one at a time?
Well, I think that would be almost approach being the ridiculous situation. In other words, if every time you wanted to define a sole source government contract, you had to add a new line by initiative, for example, that wouldn't make a lot of sense. In this particular case, again, all the initiative is proposing is that people who hold government contracts, sole source government contracts, be prohibited from certain political contributions. If that's a collective bargaining agreement, all it would provide is that the people who made the collective bargaining agreement, in other words, XYZ, would be prohibited from making political contributions. I think it's entirely consistent with the purpose of the initiative, which is, again, to ban these type of political contributions under the Fair Campaign Practice Act. So I don't quite understand. I mean, I could see the point if it was a much more complex and distinct point. In other words, we said, I can't think of an example to make it a dual subject, but if there was more definitions, maybe. I think here it's tight enough to include all of these sole source contracts within the initiative. In other words, let's say, I think your point was earlier, let's say we just said sole source government contracts didn't further define it. What that meant is we would have a series of court decisions over the next 20 years defining what was a sole source government contract. We short-circuited that process by saying, among the things we include as a sole-source government contract are this. And if you don't have three solicitations, that would be one. Well, the fact that we have three solicitations and a $100,000 limit, does that make it two subjects? No, that makes it one subject for refining the one subject. There's been I agree with you, sir, that there's not been a consistent Supreme Court decision leveling the single subject parameters to something that the normal person can quite understand, let alone the normal attorney, let alone the one who's slightly below normal. But in any case, my point is that all these are consistent because all they do is define the government contract. They don't say what will happen. They don't include other things. They say a government contract is a contract without three solicitations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and collective bargaining. I think that's what it is. We could say that's within the et cetera, et cetera. That answered your question.
No, it does. And let me just ask the slightly more specific question that I said I was going to ask, although I think it was part of your answer there. If, in fact, you got rid of all the references to collective bargaining, which I think are the last couple sentences of the definition there, if those sentences weren't there, would your understanding be that that collective bargaining agreements would still be, or should be, whether or not a court would come out that way, should be considered within the first part of that definition, even if they weren't specifically mentioned in the second part?
I think so. And the reason is a collective bargaining agreement, by its very nature, if you were to look under the procurement rules and compare definitions, collective bargaining agreement falls almost exactly under the definition of sole source contract. So I would say yes. And if we did not define it to be such, again, I would argue that it'll be defined at some court decision.
I think that's all I have for now.
Thank you, questions? Mr. Bender.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Gruskin?
It's always a little embarrassing when your own argument doesn't come into real clarity until you hear questions asked by panel, but that's kind of where I am. Let me first say that, again, I'm not a procurement lawyer, but the definition of sole source procurement is any bid where there is more than one potential bidder or offeror. So the definition doesn't talk about solicitation or receipt. So as long as we're clear about that, clearly the expanse is broader than what is portrayed. You asked the question, appropriately so, Mr. Domenico, that about whether or not collective bargaining units would be comprised within sole source if there was no specification. And I think that the answer, frankly, is that you have to read the rest of the amendment. Mr. Bender talks about litigation. Well, clearly the rest of the amendment allows for legislation, so there's a possibility the legislature could step in. But more to the point, there are other provisions that allow membership groups to undertake political activity. So a court would say, well, geez, are we going to read these together so that they can be consistent, or are we going to read a general definition of sole source contract as an exclusion? Now, I don't know where a court ends up, but I know that they're going to try to read them together. So what this does is undo what other parts of the amendment, Amendment 27, Article 28, specifically allow. Now, you can do that, but you have to do it independently. You can't use the cover of sole source contracts to take the ability of membership groups, including unions, out of the political ballgame. And that's what this is about. Now, there may be a popular majority for doing that, but the question is whether or not you can do it in this form. And so I would suggest to you that this has been shoehorned into this amendment so that indirectly the proponents can do what directly they're not willing to take on, which is to repeal the membership provision, or at least create an exception for the membership provision explicitly.
Well, so that sounds to me like an argument that this is too misleading to set for a title, as opposed, well, I guess they're sort of the same.
I think they're linked.
Thing. Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Because then I take it you would say, I mean, in some ways, that argument would suggest that you couldn't do this if instead of saying sole source government contracts, if they just said only referred to collective bargaining agreements in here, it would still have the same effect on that provision of the membership provision, right? And then you would, it's not that they specifically have to say we're repealing this membership provision, right? So it gets back to, I guess, you're saying they can't kind of hide this, they can't hide this collective bargaining bit within the broader sole source thing. That's really kind of the heart of the argument, right?
Exactly. I mean, they can't make voters choose between liking the membership communications under collective bargaining agreements and disliking sole source. They have to give the voters a clear choice.
Any further testimony? State your name, please.
Robert Lichty. Under 55, as I understand it, the idea is to have a measure that the people can vote on that they can understand. And you asked whether a court would find that a collective bargaining agreement would be a sole source contract. Who knows? I'm not aware of any law that's even close to that point. Mr. Bender said, it certainly could find that way, but then again, it could find a different way. This proposal makes it clear as to what a sole source contract is. And the idea is, if you're in a unique position, you're the sole person, and you're going to be giving money to a candidate, or if you're giving money to a proposal, that you don't get money back for that financial participation. That's the evil that is being addressed here, and this can be with service contracts, with machinery contracts. It can be with labor contracts, which is a type of service contract. That's why we were clear in saying that yes, it would include collective bargaining agreements, and those are relatively specific collective bargaining agreements, because it has to include everybody, not just a small group of people situation. So I think that the way it's drafted makes it more clear for the voters, so there's less surprise as to what they're voting on. That is, if you are in a unique position, you can't benefit from that.
Can I ask you sort of a flip side of the questions I've been asking before? Have you done any research? Do you believe that this will affect any significant number of contracts other than collective bargaining contracts? I mean, these other service contracts or procurement contracts in the sense of...
It would probably affect me, because I would have collectively a number of service agreements, and I happen to work for a lot of municipalities. I do a lot of trial work. So as I was looking at this and thinking about it, I said, I bet you this would affect me. Which all it means is that I can no longer contribute money to these campaigns. Well, maybe that's what the voters want. But it would affect a lot of service contracts. In my opinion, it would affect a lot of law firms. So it does have, there are a lot of, these are called no-bid contracts in one context. Sole source is what Colorado uses in its statutory pronouncement, so that's why we use that language. But it does affect more than just labor contracts.
Okay.
In fact, I don't think it affects all that many labor contracts, given the fact that we don't have all that many unions in Colorado.
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Oh, and also just again, it only affects the union itself. It doesn't affect the members. And that, I think, later on when we look at the language of this, there's no employee that is affected by any penalty. The penalties only go to owners and directors, and then the contract holders.
Thank you, Mr. Lichty. And I apologize. I have one follow-up question for Mr. Gruskin. And it's just to help me understand. It's in connection with your argument under 55, and I may misstate this, but I think you said, Mr. Gruskin, in connection with what you termed the omnibus proportions of a measure that 55 talked about and applying it to this particular measure, that the measure highlights one kind of enterprise with the understanding that a whole host of enterprise are covered. And I know that I probably missed a word or two in there, but would you mind possibly briefly going back to that and going through it one more time, that particular line of reasoning?
Sure.
Is the question clear?
Yeah, probably clearer than my original statement. In 55, the proposed measure would have prohibited provision of services, non-emergency services, to I forget how they termed it, non-resident aliens or something like that. And the court said, look, there's non-emergency in terms of, you know, the clear kind of welfare services that people think of when they hear that term. But there's also non-emergency in terms of a host of administrative services, like recording a property and, titling your automobile and that kind of thing. And when you highlight, and frankly it wasn't as clear there, when you highlight non-emergency and make people think about medical and welfare types of services, to the extent that they forget or have no idea that you've got this other category that's going to be affected, you're dealing with two separate subjects because you're putting people in a position of having to, number one, intuit, but number two, and more importantly, choose, which is one of the repeating themes of all the single subject case law. When you put voters in a position of having to take a look at two aspects of the measure and say, like that one, don't like that one, they ought not have to be forced to be put into that kind of trade-off. And that's what's happening here. The question is, do you want all of the other measures, other kinds of contracts, sole source contracts affected, or do you want labor contracts affected? And by highlighting these, it is very clear that proponents are going to give voters a choice, and voters are going to have to make that choice. And that, fundamentally, is at odds with the single subject statute and case law. Did that help?
That helps. Just one follow-up question, and it's not... Is it fair to say, and I understand the choice argument, is it fair to say that 59, for lack of a better term, is upfront about what is included in a sole source contract? It defines it and then includes, as an example, collective bargaining agreements. And that the court in 55 determined that there were a number of things, a number of omnibus types of things that were unstated in the measure that helped the court come to the point where it found that there was a choice and that there was a single subject problem. I guess stated differently, to me, and I'm not a 55 expert, and I think you are, the court went through a progression and arrived at a number of conclusions that maybe weren't clear from the text of the measure. What we're focusing on here, though, is a definition that clearly states and includes collective bargaining for the reader, for the voter. And in your mind, does that distinguish this measure from 55 and perhaps alleviate some of the concerns that might arise in a similar analysis by the Supreme Court of this measure?
I don't see how it can alleviate the concerns. What the court said was, look, people know that non-emergency services, people think of non-emergency services as welfare and medical kinds of services. That is the corollary to, so what they said was, it may not be stated there, but people, when they read those words, are going to be thinking medical and welfare kinds of services so that the expenditures can be reduced. That's the same thing as saying in the text, medical and welfare and other services. They didn't say that, but the court, in looking at the entire record and the other evidence that was available, said that's clearly what is intended. That's what voters will interpret. And so it seems to me, were the proponents there a little less clear? Maybe. But you've just heard counsel say that there are lots and lots of different kinds of contracts involved. The ones I took note of were labor contracts, service contracts, machinery contracts, law firm contracts. That's a pretty broad broom to sweep with. But the point is, if you hold one thing out and you say there's a whole bunch of other stuff, you can't make people choose between the specific that may have some sex appeal politically and the whole bunch of other stuff that to other audiences has sex appeal politically. It's just contrary to the single subject requirement, in my view, and at least what this, I believe the court was trying to say.
Thank you for your follow-up. Any further discussion, testimony on the single subject issue? There appear to be no further testimony from the proponents. Mr. Gruskin, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Domenico, any comment or discussion on the issue, single subject or response or summation?
I certainly appreciate the discussion. It's been very helpful. And I certainly appreciate Mr. Gruskin's concerns about how to square this with the decision in 55. I struggle to square anything with 55 and I'm always trying to figure out what exactly it means. But I don't think it can mean quite what Mr. Gruskin is saying it means, which is, I mean, in this case, what we have is an attempt to ban people who hold certain kinds of contracts from making certain political contributions. And then there's a definite, within the types of contracts that the measure tries to reach, the proponents, obviously, are concerned that if they didn't specifically include collective bargaining agreements, whoever ended up defining the scope of the measure, either the legislature or courts, would exclude collective bargaining agreements, and they want them included. And that fact that they've included it cannot, it seems to me, turn this from one subject into two. I appreciate the discussion of log rolling or presenting the public with two choices, but the choices here to me don't seem to be the type that really give rise to the concerns underlying the single subject. Where the choice here is not between two things that are unrelated or necessarily contradict one another. I mean, the question is that a voter is presented with by this measure is, do I want to ban the people with these kind of contracts from political contributions, including labor organizations, some labor organizations, or do I want to keep the current system? And there may be a few people who say, I want to ban some people, but not unions, or I would only want to ban unions and the others, but there's no reason that's necessarily two subjects. It's the same subject, and personally, I probably would wish that the measure used a term other than sole source and sort of made up their own term just to avoid any potential confusion with procurement rules, but that's an issue of the merits, and I don't think it rises to the level of any reason for us to reject the measure. And so while I understand the concerns and can certainly appreciate Mr. Gruskin's argument about 55, I don't think it's nearly as broad in any really relevant ways to 55. And I do think it's clear. I don't think that the proponents should be forced to allow courts or the legislature to define sole source contracts in a way that they would object to. That's the exact point of having an initiative process, is to allow people to define those themselves. And I don't think they should be punished for including it in there either. So I think it's a single subject. And I'm ready to move on to the title.
And I think that's a fair analysis and one that I agree with, and I don't have much to add to it. I, too, appreciate Mr. Bender and Mr. Gruskin's arguments. I think that Mr. Gruskin has raised an issue under 55. I do think it's distinguishable from 55. Based on the discussion that we've had here today and the arguments on that particular issue, I go back to 140.106.51E on kind of which lays out generally the analysis or the standards for single subject, and go back to it's to forbid the treatment of incongruous subjects in the same measure, consistent with Mr. Domenico's analysis. I'm not seeing that here. I think the proponent stated well, or at least what I agree with, is the subject of this measure, the purpose of this measure, and that is to prohibit political contributions by a particular class of contract holders that is defined within the measure. And secondly, it's to prevent surreptitious measures and apprise the people of the subject of each measure by that title. And I think that that can be done as well, and that that is another distinguishing feature from number 55. And so with that, I entertain a motion on the jurisdiction.
I move that the board find that it has jurisdiction, that the measure is a single subject.
I second that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 2-0. Move on now to the staff draft for number 59, which Ceci has put on the screen. And I would again go to testimony from the proponents and Mr. Gruskin, if he should so choose, as to the text of the staff draft. Mr. Bender?
Yes, well, we had a... I want to thank staff. I think they prepared an excellent draft. In a way, it reminds me of an Army description of something, Initiative 1, title, etc. But I think it's basically good. We had a few suggestions we would like to make as far as language. Should I read them, point them out on the board, whatever the board...
I think that's fine.
Whatever you want. Prefer.
Okay. Well, let me read it. Under the first line, and maybe I'll point this out, too. I'm nearsighted and I have to get up close. Amendment to the Colorado Constitution, and here you have concerning campaign finance and in connection therefore or therewith, I would strike this language from concerning campaign finance and, because it could read an amendment to the Colorado Constitution prohibiting the holder of contracts, et cetera, et cetera. That would be the first suggestion that we have. I don't know, do you want me to go through line by line? Okay, next suggestion we have down here was without competitive bidding, sole source government contracts, including certain collective bargaining agreements with labor. I don't think you have to have bargaining agreements with labor. Sole source, including collective bargaining agreements. It doesn't have to have with labor organizations in there. Again, I think it's superfluous.
Mr. Bender?
I apologize. Can we back up maybe and kind of reverse course and take
sure.
these up?
However you prefer.
One by one.
And your if that would be all right with you, I think that would be my preference.
Yes.
Your first suggestion on lines 1 and 2, the in connection, the concerning campaign finance in connection therewith language. And where is Mr. Hobbs when you need him now? But. Historically and traditionally, the statement of the single subject in what the title board has customarily viewed as compliance with relevant statutory principles is to state it as consistent with bill titles in the legislature, mm-hmm. and to use the concerning language, which states the single subject of the measure. And follow, and if you know all this, I apologize.
It's all right. I mean, I know you're making a record. I guess
following that, the connection therewith and the trailer then contains kind of the specifics of the measure. And your suggestion is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution prohibiting the holder of contracts totaling $100,000 or more.
You might want this concerning campaign finance, but this language and in connection therewith. That really strikes me as overly legalese, which someone reading, going into the voting booth to read the, you know, they have an idea of the substance of the amendment and they know which ones they want to vote for or against. I think words like their connected therewith and therewithal and who, what, with, where, things like that are unneedingly, they're complex. The general public doesn't need them, and I think there's this general trend in the legal community against using words like that, too. So that would be my suggestion.
Well, I guess initially, and we can come back to that, and Mr. Domenico, I'm sure, has his own take on this, but
okay.
I guess I would resist that particular change, but then we can come back.
Well, if we want to go through them all, I mean, I'm on the record as essentially agreeing that we don't need to always use that language. Here, I don't think it gets in the way as much as it does somewhere, even though I agree that it's probably unnecessary and not very helpful in the interests of tradition and risk aversion. I'm tempted to leave it in there just because that's the way it's always been done. On the other hand, especially if Mr. Carton's not going to vote to take it out, I'm not gonna.
Okay. Well,
I'm not gonna fight over it.
Well,
I guess in this case, although I have in the past.
Okay. Well, I'll go on further then. This including certain collective bargaining agreements with labor organizations. Again, almost all collective bargaining agreements, virtually 100%, are with labor organizations. It just struck us as superfluous.
So, what would
be your suggested revision to that particular clause?
That language struck out.
The whole,
including certain collective bargaining agreements.
So just
comma.
Strike out with
labor organizations.
Mm-hmm. And then the next proposal is actually wrong here. It says certain of their employees. No employees would have a benefit. It would be officers or directors. So this is a clear error, and I think that needs to be corrected.
Actually, it's owners too.
Yes.
So the suggestion is on line
nine. Instead of employees, really wrong. It's incorrect. So I mean, that would be misleading.
Can you could you, if you have it handy, can you refer me quickly to the text of the measure that
that's 4.5 definition?
Yeah,
on the second page.
So the language is including persons that control 10% or more shares or interest in that party, the party's officers, directors, or trustees, or in the case of collecting environment bargaining agreements, the labor organization and any political committees created or controlled by that.
I think that should say instead of employees, officers, or directors.
So, again, instead of certain of their employees, could you repeat that, Mr. Vendor, your suggestion?
Instead of certain of their employees, the only language of the word that would be taken out is employees and substituted officers and directors.
I think we should include owners in that owners, officers, and directors.
I think owners would be up to your discretion. Certainly wouldn't be incorrect.
I think we should, might as well, just in the interest of comprehensiveness, include it.
So that would be owners.
Officers. Sessie?
Yeah, probably. Owners, comma, officers, and directors.
Yes, that would make that... That makes it correct.
Okay.
And then, of course, the submission clause will be changed accordingly. And if there's no more questions. We did have a question about this index for inflation, but I can understand why you have that in there because it's in the measure.
Yeah, I thought of that too. I don't know if we need it, but I don't think it.
Again, that's to your discretion. I just wanted to make sure that this particular one was an error, so we wanted to make sure. Thank you very much.
I think those are all good changes. I suggest we leave in indexed for inflation just again in case it's, you wouldn't want to have to go through the whole process just because the court decided it was misleading without that for whatever reason, in the unlikely event. So if we make basically those two changes, I think it's accurate. I'm not sure about removing with labor organizations, I guess. Actually thinking about it, I think it's probably better, clearer without it, because the action language as the title is written gets pretty far separated the subject from what you're actually prohibiting them from doing. I mean, holder, the person you're prohibiting something from doing something is on line 2, and then it's not till line 5 that you really find out what they're prohibited doing. So the less gibberish we can have in there in between holder and from making a contribution, the clearer I think it is. And especially taking out something like labor organizations, which from right in front of it avoids potentially confusion or overemphasizing the labor organization aspect of it. So I've come around to thinking that's a good change, in fact. And So I think the two changes we've made, and I could be talked into getting rid of as indexed for inflation too, but I'm happy with it with these two proposed amendments.
Does anyone else wish to testify on the text, the staff draft for proposed initiative number 59? Seeing none, Mr.
Can I just make one other comment that I did have and maybe should have brought up before? Is there any concern that campaign finance as a statement of the single subject is overly broad? Not in the sense that I'm pretty sure that same statement of a single subject has been upheld as a single subject before on more than one occasion, I think. And I agree that it's within the umbrella of campaign finance this measure falls, but it seems to me it's also a narrower measure than some of the others that have fallen within that, and I just wonder if we should try to narrow the statement at all. I'm not sure it's necessary. I do think it's accurate. I think it's a single subject. I think I just wonder if it could be made clearer. I don't think it's misleading as it's written. I'm just not sure it's as helpful as it could be.
Could you come to the podium, please, Mr. Bender?
I'm sorry about that. I didn't want to. I was just going to suggest that the unofficial caption, restrictions on campaign contributions, might be appropriate wording there. In other words, it would read, an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning restrictions on campaign contributions. I think that might be a little tighter, but it's still...
It's narrower than...
I do think that narrows it a little bit. I think it's still accurate. I think it's still a single subject. I would suggest that we make that sort of a change so it would read concerning restrictions on campaign contributions. And then delete campaign finance. I think I would, I don't know if you want me to move those first or if you want to read it. I guess I'll...
Want to go ahead and move all of the changes reflected on
sure.
the screen?
Sure. I'll move that the board make those three changes we've discussed, and recommend that you read it before we actually take a vote.
And those three changes are to modify the staff draft by on line one. Striking campaign finance and substituting restrictions on campaign contributions. On line 5, striking with labor organizations. And on line 9, striking employees and substituting owners, officers, and directors. I second that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes 2-0. Any further suggested revisions? Mr. Bender, do you have anything further?
No.
Then I'll go ahead and read the proposed title prior to a motion. The staff draft title,
yes,
modified, would read as follows. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning restrictions on campaign contributions, in connection therewith, prohibiting the holder of contracts totaling $100,000 or more, as indexed for inflation, awarded by state or local governments without competitive bidding, paren quote, sole source government contracts, close quote, close paren, including certain collective bargaining agreements, for making a contribution for the benefit of a political party or candidate for elective office during the term of the contracts, and for 2 years thereafter, disqualifying a person who makes a contribution in a ballot issue election from entering into a sole source government contract related to the ballot issue, comma. Is that a comma or a semicolon? That's a semicolon. Semicolon, pardon me. And imposing liability and penalties on contract holders, comma, certain of their owners, comma, officers and directors, comma, and government officials for violations of the amendment, period, and making changes to the ballot title and submission clause consistent with those revisions. And I'll accept a motion on that title. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm good with that. I'll move that we adopt that title as amended.
I'll second it. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
That passes 2-0. And the title board's action on number 59 is complete. Thank at 2:50. Thank you to the proponents, Mr. Gruskin. And that concludes the title board's work for today. We are adjourned.